Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode of the podcast, I am speaking with author Cliff Dunning, and we are discussing his book, Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men: Awaken the Prostate for Multiple Orgasms. Obviously, this is a not suitable for kids nor suitable for work podcast. And I don't know if my podcast ever really is suitable for kids or work. But if you're a kid and you're listening to this, turn it off. You shouldn't be listening to this one. This is for adults. Before we get into the interview, which was actually held a little over 2 months ago now, so this has been in the queue to be released here on the podcast, just have a couple quick announcements. I'd like to thank David, who bumped up his level of support over at my Patreon page from somewhere near the bottom all the way up to the very top, to the God Molecule level, in order to claim his monthly 1 hour consultation and check-in with me. Thank you very much, David, for your ongoing support at Patreon and for coming up to the very top tier of the God Molecule level. It's very much appreciated to have your support in that way. Over this past week, there were no other donations or support coming into the podcast, so just a friendly reminder that this is a listener-supported podcast, that I do rely on donations to help support and fund and keep this going. And so if you'd like to support the podcast, it's very easy. You can stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net, use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, or you can use the link over to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/martinwball, and you can sign up at the monthly support level that is most comfortable for you and gets you the benefits and bonuses that you want. Everything from $1 a month all the way up to $100 a month. And also, as I mentioned last week, and I'll be repeating this a few more times over the coming weeks, that I am looking to move the Entheogenic Evolution podcast archive and back catalog over to my Patreon page, and it is accessible to everybody who's in the top four tiers. So that's everything from a $20 monthly contribution up to $100 monthly contribution, of course, with all the regular bonuses and benefits of those membership levels. And I think I've got maybe 30 hours or 30 episodes up so far. There's still a lot more to go. It just takes a while for me to transfer it all over there, but eventually everything that I have that is no longer available actively here on the podcast is going to be available over at the Patreon page. So it's just a way for you to continue to have access to back interviews and talks and lectures and all that kind of good stuff. And lastly, of course, I am still always available for 30, 60, and 90-minute consultations to help you integrate your entheogenic experience. For more information, just stop by at nondualentheogenicintegration.com. Okay, so that's all the news that I have for this week. Let's go ahead and get into this conversation with Cliff Dunning, which again happened about 2 months ago. We're discussing his book, Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men. Hope you enjoy and find it informative. Okay, well, I'm going to officially welcome Cliff Dunning onto the Entheogenic Evolution podcast for this week. And he's got a book out now that I had a chance to read over the past couple of weeks, and it's called Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men. And then it really gets to the meat of it when we get to the subtitle, which is Awaken the Prostate for Multiple Orgasms. So today we're pretty much having a conversation for men, by men, about men, and men's sexuality and sexual experience and the use of cannabis, as well as a very interesting organ that men have that actually has sexual properties that a lot of people maybe are not really aware of, which is the prostate. So Cliff, let's kind of start by getting to know you and your entry into the world of sexuality and cannabis, and you know, then we can walk through the book and get into all these different topics. But first, just want to welcome you on and get to know you a little bit.
Hey, thanks, Martin. I appreciate it. Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, how did you get into the topic of cannabis and sexual ecstasy?
It's a weird one. It's a strange topic. I am somewhat of an archaeologist. I'm not a trained archaeologist, but I have studied ancient culture and have a podcast of my own called Earth Ancients, where we speak to archaeologists who are doing excavations from around the world, who have written books. And about 5-6 years ago, I was researching a book on ancient buildings in India, and I ran across temples that had all these figures in various tantric positions that were dedicated to Lord Shiva. And along with these figures was images of what looked like cannabis. And so I was like, well, what the heck is that? And I started researching some of the tantric traditions that originate in India. And I discovered that these, and this is 3,000-4,000 years ago, couples were brought together in what is only considered a commune or in a tantric session. They drank a cannabis concoction called bhang, and they would have ritualistic sex, intercourse, for hours at a time. And this is what we see when we see these temples in India, these dedicated temples to Lord Shiva, who is the god of not only cannabis, he's the god of yoga, and he's also the god of sexual tantra. And that triggered my whole mindset on why were they, first of all, having bhang, this cannabis concoction, with their orgies, and secondly, what was the outcome of drinking this concoction and sexual union? Well, if you've seen the walls, you've seen these temples, they are going through every noted and even some unknown tantric positions, which was fascinating to me. So that's kind of the beginning of it. And then I began discovering the different types of tantra that were out there and completing this book. And so that's part one. Part two is I was the program director for the Cannabis Summit in San Francisco from 2017 to 2019. And I was speaking to different wellness practitioners, including MDs, who were beginning to prescribe cannabis as a aid for not only pain, but also in some cases for conditions of, I guess you could call it frigidity for mm-hmm. women.
Yeah.
Women who are having trouble having intercourse, having orgasms. I mean, orgasms were not even in the question when they were having painful sex. And at that time, the research on cannabis was in its infancy, and we weren't well. The process of consumption was not well known. Since that time, in the last 2 years or 2.5 years, our understanding has grown exponentially because it's been legalized here in California. And there's a great deal of research showing that the compounds within cannabis, primarily the cannabinoid cellular structure, almost matched identically to what they call endocannabinoids in the human body. Mm-hmm. And when you smoke a small amount, you ingest, eat a small amount of cannabis, it works beautifully on the sexual organs. And so this is something that I began to research, and that's just the basics. We can get into the details on the various strains and how the prostate is affected as we continue.
Yeah, well, let's maybe go back and talk a little bit about cannabis and archaeology. So you mentioned being kind of a non-professional archaeologist, but very interested in the question. And this is something that I've definitely found very fascinating and have always loved sharing with students. You know, formerly I taught religious studies at Southern Oregon University here in Ashland. I got laid off. They don't have a religion program. So when budget cutbacks came in from coronavirus, low enrollment and all that, that my classes were among the first to go because, you know, they don't have a program in religion, but I taught there for over a decade and always enjoyed kind of surprising my students, you know, because a lot of them come in with a very naive understanding of religion. And then, like you mentioned, these temples in India, and I'd show them pictures of the temples in India and talk about, well, this is religion in India, not for everyone, but for some people, and getting into Shiva and Tantra. And I would always tell my students that Shiva was my favorite Indian god because he was the original god of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Exactly.
And, you know, sharing with them the latest archaeological finds, like here's a grave that was dug up in China from 5,000 years ago, and it's just filled with buds, you know, things like that. I always enjoyed sharing with them. And I'm sure you're familiar with Chris Bennett. I know that you have his book listed in the back of your book. And so I've had Chris on talking about archaeology and cannabis, but I was just wondering if there's any little nuggets or little buds from that you would like to share that you've come across relating to archaeology and cannabis.
Well, I did some research on the study of Tantra as it applies to Hindu religious sects. And it looks like they understood the effects of cannabis on the body much better than we did. Or we do, I should say. At some point, I hope that we do learn and analyze and use the data that we find in the new research. But to use cannabis in this concoction, this bang concoction, we discovered this. First of all, these, you can call them orgies if you want, but that's a kind of a crude way of saying.
Yeah.
Orchestrated sexual union. The first thing that I discovered was that the tantra that they were practicing was to reach an orgasmic state. And when you have an orgasm, it is not only a very high point physiologically within the body, but it looks like, and because we don't measure anything outside of the physical dimension, we can't really verify this, but it looks like they were able to move the energy through the chakra system with this enhanced sensitivity that the cannabis brought into orgasmic states that were, I can only call them, cosmic. So they're leaving the normal consciousness and getting into a state of arousal and connection to either their higher self, or to a point which I can only describe as nirvana. And these states were of such a degree that your body, and we'll talk about having my experiment with myself and with other people, the body automatically, you lose a sense of consciousness and the body goes autonomic. Mm-hmm. So it's breathing and functioning, but you're not aware of your physical body. You're in a higher dimension. My belief, and some of the really crude writing that doesn't really focus on the sexual relation side of it, appears to show that the ancient Hindus understood these higher levels of consciousness that were attained with this cannabis. Now, in my book, I hint on these higher levels of consciousness, but I don't get into a lot because my book basically was to present arousal strains of cannabis and the prostate, which is not really well understood in terms of a sexual organ. But I'm almost sure that these Hindus were presenting massage techniques, tantric yoga. I don't know if you do yoga or not. There's certain positions that actually enhance sexual union and enhance the consciousness to a degree where you can have higher, say, states of awareness which reach a nirvana. And so this discovery was fascinating to me. And at some point we may find a temple that actually has writing on what these guys were experiencing, because other than the sketchy kinds of descriptions on how to make this concoction, how women were having sexual satisfaction, and everybody, it seemed important, and also a place of learning that is hopefully going to come full circle as we know and realize, and through our analytic studies, how cannabis affects the body, how it also enhances an orgasm and physically, and moves beyond the physical into this altered state of consciousness where we are dealing with levels of reality that seem like masterful enhancements, supernatural almost. So kind of hard to describe.
Yeah. So for anybody listening out there who's not familiar with this architecture, you can go into Google and do an image search and just type in like Kama Sutra Temple. And then,
or anything with Shiva Temple.
Yeah. And you can find these images, and, you know, just looking at them is pretty outrageous. You can see like people with horses and men and women and women and men and men and men and like all these different combinations. And some people are upside down and some people are on their side and the horses are involved. And it can be kind of shocking for a sort of Western's really watered down sense of spirituality. You know, tantric practice is something that I think is being more incorporated into a lot of people's spiritual practice. So there's more awareness around that. But still, American culture tends to be fairly prude when it comes to questions of sexuality. And so, this is one of these things that I would intentionally shock my students with. Like, I could show them images of the temple and say, and this is a temple, right? This is a religious structure. So these are religious acts that are being depicted here. And then, when we get into Shiva, with this iconography, he has water squirting out of the top of the head, but that's actually his semen that's been transmuted through the chakra system up through his body. And so it represents his, you know, transcendent states of consciousness, just as you're describing here. And I always love to share with my students that, you know, I'd ask them, how do you think, you know, here in America, we celebrate Jesus's birthday with Christmas, right? Well, how do you think you celebrate Shiva's birthday? And, you know, students would throw out different propositions, and I'd tell them, well, actually, the way you celebrate his birthday is you go get a chillum and you shove it with a bunch of cannabis, and then you get as high as you can. That's exactly celebrating his birthday. And so, you know, these are elements within Indian culture. And I always also like to emphasize that in Indian culture, and use of Tantra, that it really spans the spectrum from what you're describing here of kind of group ritualized sexual experiences that are imbibing cannabis and sometimes possibly other psychedelic compounds as well. And then all the way sort of on the other end of the scale, we have Buddhist forms of tantric practice where it's never done with an actual person or with a what we would call a consort or a seal, and it's all a visualized process. So it's all taking place in a visionary state, but you're not actually engaging in a physical act itself. And so it kind of spans this spectrum, but it's all included within the topic of Tantra and sacred sexuality and the use of those energies of the sexual experience and of orgasm, as you're describing, in order to propel consciousness into these more transcendent enlightenment states.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Cliff, just maybe tell us, let's kind of take a little bit of a detour and just tell us about your own personal experience and history with cannabis, and then we can get into the question of the combination of cannabis with sexual experience. But I'm just kind of curious if you'd anything from your own background that you'd want to share there, and also having run what was the name of the gathering you
the
were
San Francisco Cannabis Summit.
The Cannabis Summit. Yeah. So maybe just tell us a little bit of that history.
So that was developed as a I was the program director for the San Francisco New Living Expo, but the side conference was the Cannabis Summit, which was a educational program for lay people, as well as they had tracks for people who were professionals from 2017 to 2019. And it's still going on, but in a smaller version in San Francisco every spring. But what that was all about was bringing together wellness professionals, farmers of cannabis, producers, and other experts to bring forth the latest information on strain development. And if you don't know, for those of you listening, cannabis has gotten so sophisticated that they are now developing strains that are excellent for cognition, for pain management, for sex, or they call it arousal. You can actually go on WeedMap website or Leafly or whatever your favorite search engine is for cannabis, punch in a specific topic, remedy or whatever, and you'll find a growing number of specifically designed plants, plant medicines to address whatever your situation is. So that was a big part of the program. And then we would have physicians who were actually recommending medicines for various conditions and reporting on how they actually were working on people. And this is the beginning of a much needed data analysis of how cannabis works on the body. And for the most part, a vast majority of treatments are very successful. We can't really get into healing. We can't say it's healing things because it's still it's illegal to say those kind of things. But it's showing that in many cases where cancer, degenerative disease, specifically neurological disorders, cannabis has a wonderful effect, a very natural effect on the body. So this is what this summit was all about. I'm sorry, what was your other question? You wanted to know about how I was smoking. Well, if you want to get the basics on me, I'm a native Californian. Mm-hmm. So when I was in high school, we had a very poor quality of marijuana, which usually came from either Mexico or someplace in the Middle East. Sometimes you would find somebody locally growing it, but my introduction was like anybody else who was growing up. We wanted to experiment. I preferred cannabis over LSD, which was really big at the time. We also occasionally were lucky to get some mushrooms, which kind of made things fun. But moving to today, the cannabis that is grown today compared to when we were in high school is night and day.
Yeah.
Not only is it significantly stronger, but one of the, I think, the big benefits is the psychoactive properties have been enhanced through plant genetics. And rather than taking or going through an ayahuasca trip or going through a DMT trip, which is very powerful and you have really no control. When you're smoking high strains and powerful levels of THC within the cannabis, you can have levels of awareness that come very close to psychedelics, except you can stop the trip mm-hmm. and eliminate the beginnings of a bad experience. And I've talked to a number of people who believe that this is really where it's at for the majority of people who just don't want to take a ayahuasca trip and fall off the planet, you know. So what we're seeing today are genetically engineered cannabis strains that are very powerful in their effect, very beneficial on a wellness scale, and the sky's the limit in terms of their healing ability and in human enhancement.
Yeah, if I could just comment on a few of the things that you've brought up here. First of all, I just want to say just how fortunate you and I both are that we live in Western states in the United States. You're in California, I'm in Oregon. Most of the Western states at this point have legalized both medicinal cannabis as well as recreational cannabis. And I know that there are people listening to this podcast that don't live in areas like that. And it could be hard to really imagine what is available for those of us who are fortunate enough to live in states where these laws have been changed, that, you know, we can go into these dispensaries and just the range of products and, as you say, the specialization of the different hybrids and the different strains and different properties and all the different ways from buds to waxes to cartridges and edibles. I mean, it's just incredible. And also something that I've seen and know a number of women who have used, there are now cannabis lubricants for women for sexual activity. And the women that I've spoken to have used it are very fond of these products that, as you say, it engages the endocannabinoid system. And also just wanted to reflect on, yeah, when I was a high school student, the only cannabis we had was this growing up in North Central California was like this Mexican, it was called Mexican ditch weed, and it was flat and it was brown and it was filled with seeds and filled with stems. And like compared to any dispensary that you go into these days, it is just like night and day, the quality difference. So like young people growing up today in California and Oregon, they don't know about this old Mexican ditch weed that we had to deal with when we were younger, but it's the product these days is just so infinitely superior and so much more diverse as well. Yeah. I wonder if you could just talk to us a little bit about the endocannabinoid system, because this is still something that a lot of people don't really know that much about, but it's dealing with the fact that we actually have a system inside our body that produces and regulates endocannabinoids, inside cannabinoids. So
inside cannabinoids.
Yeah. So I wonder if there's anything you could share about that.
You said it pretty well. We just don't know enough about it. In fact, one of the real pleasures of being the producer of this or the program director of this conference was the science aspect of how it's healing, how it works. What is very, very, very strange, and I say this constantly, is that it really appears that the compounds, the cannabinoids within cannabis so mimic the endo, we call them the endocannabinoids in the human body. They're almost like they were made together. They work so harmoniously, and we really see it in the pain reduction because they cross over a number of different chemical barriers where medicines, like hardcore artificial medicines, have to go through different areas of the body to affect change, whereas these natural cannabis products are more direct and more fully effective because there's greater amounts of the compound affect the are used for the affected areas. So not only do people feel better sooner, it's a natural earth-based product and the effects are stronger. And we're going to hear about more of the healing properties in the next few years as it becomes more federally acceptable. Unfortunately, and you brought it up in the very beginning, Martin, is the fact that we're not completely legalized. We still have a number of states that are not legal. And because of that, the federal government cannot put money towards research, cannot spend the big, big dollars with the FDA to get more research done on the healing effects of this wonderful plant medicine. So we're just at the very tip of the iceberg when it comes to how the body works with these compounds. Now, I am writing about in Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men. And by the way, I wish they hadn't said men because there's so much in here for women. It really should have been Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men and Women. I think it's because I focus a number of chapters on the prostate. But one of the things that is becoming apparent is that these endocannabinoid cellular structures are heavily populating the uterus, the vagina, the prostate, the gonads or the testicles. And when you're high with a specific strain, the slightest touch is amplified significantly. So it actually, we can see why the ancients were so high, so big on this plant medicine, because they didn't have the same kind of science that we do. They had a different kind of science. But what appears to happen is that the enhanced sensitivity, prostate, uterus, vagina, clitoris, is on a magnitude that when two things happen. First of all, you're forced to relax. You cannot be altered and not be relaxed. It forces you to relax. In those relaxed states, you're more aware of your body. And when you are under the influence of a good cannabis strain that is designed to arouse you, you will have the beginnings and the early stages of an orgasm into full-blown orgasms very, very quick. Now, if you have a problem, if you've had a history of painful sex or intercourse, it may take longer. You may have to address lubrication, things like that. But when you use cannabis as a sexual aid, it is the greatest aphrodisiac that we've found to the date. And I'm talking over Viagra. I'm talking over some of these other synthetics that help men and help women and that are regularly prescribed by doctors to enhance sexual intimacy.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're saying, and I believe this information is also in your book, that the actual sexual organs themselves and the sexual systems and reproductive systems in the human body are already activated by the endocannabinoid system, that they're intimately tied to that system. And so when someone is consuming cannabis, that they are naturally activating the natural sexual and reproductive system that already exists within them, versus taking some like Viagra, something else that is working through other pathways and means. So it's a very natural system. And yes, we really do need to get cannabis rescheduled. I mean, it's currently listed as a Schedule 1, no medicinal properties. We all know that it's total BS, that that's something that needs to be changed. And there's slow movement in Congress to actually maybe get into decriminalization, maybe get into rescheduling it. But it definitely needs to be done so that we can take a more robust scientific approach to actually studying all this, because this should be fascinating to everyone. And especially when there is so many different forms of dysfunction within our society, and sexual dysfunction, I think we can include in there, and sexual dissatisfaction, that here's a natural, very effective route that is transformative for people. And we should be able to study that, and we should be able to, you know, put money into that. And, you know, for the benefit of human beings. Why not?
Yeah. It's funny you mention that, Martin, because in the book I talk about, we call these cannabis vacations or tourism. And they do this in California. They probably do it in Oregon as well. It's big in Europe. When you live in an illegal state where cannabis is outlawed, you go to another country or another state, and you go to a local dispensary.
Yeah.
You get your whatever grams of flower. You find a comfortable hotel, and you experience this arousal, and you are relaxed, and you are hopefully having these higher levels of consciousness through which is an orgasm. An orgasm is a pleasurable physical event, but we're just beginning to realize that not only does it release vital hormones and other properties into the bloodstream, it also is very, very good for consciousness enhancement. And we're just at the tip of the iceberg of understanding just how important an orgasm is. And so it's one of the most beneficial and health-providing physiological events that we can have.
Yeah. Is there anything that can assist that for people? And especially something like cannabis, which is basically harmless and good for you in so many different ways, that seems like a really viable route for helping a lot of people. And not just helping people who have sexual dysfunction, but really the focus of your book is this idea of entering into new realms of pleasurable sexual experience that are beyond what people may, particularly men, you know, when we're talking about the prostate, that it could be beyond what they might be experiencing through other forms of sexual pleasure. So let's now transition to, let's talk about the prostate. So this is something that I know that a lot of homosexual men are very familiar with. But for a lot of heterosexual men, it's kind of more of a, ooh, I don't know about that. And, you know, it's a little more of a taboo kind of subject. But let's go ahead. Let's talk about the prostate and why is it a sexual organ for men and that there's so little awareness around it?
Yeah. I write in the book in the very beginning, the only time men discover their prostate is when they have an infection, when they have a urinary problems, they can't pee comfortably, or they have blocked urine, or they go in for their annual prostate exam, which a lot of men were like, well, I'm not happy about that. But in my research, and it doesn't show directly that the ancient people understood the prostate, I believe that they did. But the ancient Chinese were very aware of the prostate, and they would prescribe cannabis to the king, who had numbers of concubines that he needed to satisfy. And this is how he continued his lineage, is to have sexual relations with a number of women. The doctors were prescribing cannabis, and they were very likely in the know regarding the prostate gland. We don't hear about prostate health until the late 1800s, when men were complaining of prostatitis, which is an inflammation of the prostate. And what was recommended in the late 1800s, 1860s, right into the turn of the century, was prostate massage. Now, this is a crude way of massaging the prostate, where the doctor would actually insert his finger and massage the prostate. Or in some cases where the doctor was somewhat enlightened, he would have the patient's spouse massage the prostate. Mm. And this is one way of relieving infection and inflammation. When we cross over into the 1900s, the prostate was a subject of interest in its disease. And when we get into the late 1970s, we look at Japan and the work of a urologist who began understanding, and I should grab his name. I'm looking at my book right here. this urologist was dealing with a tremendous amount of men with not only inflammation of the prostate, but the beginnings of various disease processes. I'm gonna try to talk with you and find his name. I honestly should always remember his name. What he developed, Takahashi, what he developed was a way to relieve inflammation by creating a medical device called a prostate massager. In 1970, the prostate massagers they were making were small, round. They looked like probes. They're about 4 inches long or longer, with a round head inserted through the anus, but made to be hands-free. And as you moved the hips. They actually massaged the prostate and moved the inflammation through the urethra out and through the penis. Now, what happened in his research of this product was that some men were having orgasms. Mm-hmm. And these orgasms were very random, but he began researching and analyzing these orgasms. He eventually set up a office in Houston, Texas, and began working with the AMA here in America, distributing these massagers under the name High Island. What happened is that the gay community picked up on it and began using it, and this is in the 80s up until present. And to this day, you still can buy these prostate massagers. They're excellent for problematic prostates. In fact, more men need to know about it. This is a real problem in America because of our Judeo-Christian ethic that bleeds through our society. Any talk of prostate, putting your finger in your rectum, masturbation, sexual pleasure for men is basically no-no, because as we were, you know, my parents were, well, you know, don't touch yourself. You know, you should not be seeking pleasure. For the most part, sexual exploration was done behind closed doors. My parents didn't talk about it. I was partly raised by a grandfather who was a doctor who did talk about it, which was kind of cool. But that is so rare in today's society that we don't learn about sexuality. We don't learn about what an orgasm is. And this is why it's still taboo. So I kind of went over the crest there. Sorry, Martin.
Yeah, that's quite all right. And I mean, just sort of reflecting on these persistent taboos around sexuality and discussions of sexuality, that we are even now seeing kind of the return of book banning and book burning and trying to purge public schools of any discussion of sexuality or sexual health or sexual well-being. And so in a lot of ways, you know, there had been progress, I think, that was made in sort of educating children and the youth about sexual health and sexual function. And now we're kind of moving backwards in a lot of areas in the country where things are being even more restrictive, even more doctrinally dogmatic. And we even have, you know, the rise of politicians now outright claiming to be Christian nationalists and wanting to instill Judeo-Christian values and make it the official religion of the United States. And the whole patriarchal system of the man is ruling the woman and ruling the children. And so it's a relief to see books like yours kind of going the other direction to try and open up the conversation around sexual experience, around altered states of consciousness, and around the value of receiving and experiencing pleasure inside the human body, and not sort of this commitment to life should be suffering and that pleasure is just hedonistic and it's bad. That it's such a realm of human experience that is not, I think it's not properly recognized and valued within our society. And so it's still, people are very prudish about it. And even in, you know, cannabis and psychedelic communities, that people still can be very prudish around anything that even seems to be about sexuality, that people get very protective and very judgmental. And so it's an area that really could use a lot more conversation and discussion than I think it currently receives.
I have to agree with you, Martin, when you say that we've kind of gone backward. The reversal of Roe versus Wade was a devastating hit for women, because not only did these Planned Parenthood clinics provide birth control and abortions, they were also educating women about their not only genitalia, but what it feels like to have an orgasm, what it feels like to have a loving sexual relations with their husband and their boyfriend, mm-hmm. whoever. And this has been such a terrible tragedy to women and men. My girlfriend was mourning this for a whole week. She wore black as kind of a ceremony to at this great loss. And you know, I don't want to get into politics, but the conservative movement is actually doing women in the United States a huge disservice with these laws. And it apparently it's not going to stop. They're looking at transgender people. They're looking at gay marriage. I mean, it's just not going to stop. And this is a real step backwards in human evolution, really. I mean, I can say that because it really is.
I would definitely agree with that. So to kind of summarize the overall theme of the book here, when it comes to the prostate and use of cannabis, what you're discussing in the book and really kind of giving a program, here's the outline of how to go about doing it, the system that you talk about, using small doses of cannabis, not blowing your mind with cannabis, but using small doses of cannabis to sensitize the prostate and the sexual organs in general, you know, beyond just the use for sexual pleasure, but this idea that you're sensitizing it, that you're kind of tuning in to how to activate the prostate as a sexual experience, and then in conjunction with the prostate massagers, and then even eventually what you describe in the book is moving beyond the use of the prostate massager so that then cannabis itself becomes the trigger for really what you're getting into is these transcendent full body orgasms. And, you know, I will just say I have not experienced this through the prostate. I have certainly experienced very profound full body orgasms through 5-MeO-DMT and also through MDMA, but not through this route of the prostate and cannabis. So walk us through what this process is. And again, it's very carefully step-by-step outlined in the book with various exercises and how to move through this process.
I'll mention real quickly, and then I'll give you some the steps. You don't need, with the new strains out there, and by the way, the book features the top 20 strains of cannabis, which probably in the next 5 or 10 years will be completely downplayed because there'll be a whole new generation coming up. You know, I mean, these guys aren't, the geneticists are not sitting back and going, okay, we're done. We're not going to have anymore. they're probably back. They're in their labs and mixing and matching. And so I fully expect that in the next few years, we're going to see very, very potent arousal strains. That's the key word. Mm-hmm. When you go to your dispensary or whoever you get your weed from, you know, you want the arousal strains. What I want to say is that some of the newer strains and even some of the classics like Sour Diesel, Blue Dream, Granddaddy Purple, you could take a small microdose. And that's the key. You don't want to get plastered. You want to have a small microdose. And once it begins to activate on the body, you don't need to use a massager. You can actually massage your lower belly, your groin area, and have a powerful orgasm. Or in some cases, and this is the big one today, is before you engage in what you would like self-pleasuring or with a girlfriend or whoever, boyfriend, whatever the situation is, you intend, using intention. Intention is a gift that humanity doesn't use enough. It is a way to program the brain. It's a software. I intend to have a full body orgasm. When you intend at the very beginning, you're setting up the resonance and the vibration of the cannabis together with a comfortable, non-disturbed environment to have a very profound orgasm. So that's just one way to do it. So in the book, I describe, do you want me to talk about the steps 1 through completion?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay.
But
so
reveal or conceal as much as you want, you know, in terms of, I'm not going to ask you to like, well, give everything away that's in the book, but yeah, you're welcome to share whatever level of detail that you'd like.
Before we go on, I want to mention that you can read chapter 4 on the website, themaleorgasm.com. Mm. And I give away chapter 4, which is mostly the arousal strains. So you want to look at the arousal strains and the beginnings of this process to reach these, what I call cosmic orgasms. So the first thing you do is that you want to find a strain. If you haven't smoked weed at all, what you need to do is you need to look at the book, go to chapter 4, it's free. Mm-hmm. Find a strain that appeals to you. Maybe the name appeals to you. Maybe you read a little bit about how it came about. Maybe you read a little bit about its THC levels, whatever. What the best criteria for selection is not high THC. THC is the psychoactive compound in the plant that is used. And that's what alters you. You're altered by THC, the psychedelic. So if you're a novice to cannabis, you want to find low THC strains within the arousal group, okay? And you want to experiment with one or two prior to a full session, what I call the sexual cannabis session. You try them. You see, you get a sense of how they feel, you know. Before you take any hit, any consumption, you want to intend on the session. And what that is simply saying, I intend for this plant medicine to bring me sexual excitement, sexual joy, whatever, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. So you experiment a little bit. Then once you've experimented a little bit, you have a sense of some of the plant medicines out there. You want to have a comfortable setting, preferably alone. I've talked to some men that like to have their wife or girlfriend with them. That's fine. But honestly, you really need to be in an undisturbed environment where you can fully experience your body. You can fully express what you're feeling. When I say express, it's like some men cry, some men groan because the orgasms that are coming through are so powerful. And to do that, they need to be in a very intimate, quiet, undisturbed setting. So setting is a big one. And then if they've never experienced a powerful orgasm, I strongly suggest they go to the website Aeros, A-N-E-R-O-S, get a basic massager and experiment with how that feels when you are altered. Because most of us will not orgasm without the help of the planet. If you don't use the plant and have your sensory receptors enhanced, using a massager is not going to do anything. You're going to go, what the hell is this in my ass? You know. So you're altered, you're comfortable, and I give this detail in the book from start to finish. You insert this massager, and let me just make one side note. If you are very aware of your body, you do yoga, you do tai chi, you do body movement, you don't necessarily need to use a massager. You can massage your abdomen, whatever, with the intention, with the comfort, with the relaxed state, and you may develop an orgasm. If you can bypass the stigma of shoving something in your ass, you're going to be amazed at the kind of orgasms you have. When I began experimenting, and when men's groups experiment with these massagers and these microdoses of cannabis, they have orgasms on the scale of they can't imagine. They've never had a penile orgasm or masturbated in the same way. Having the level of orgasm through masturbation is one level of orgasm, but a prostate-based orgasm is very, very strong, very, very powerful. The gay men's community has known about this probably for a couple of decades. And, you know, if you're gay, you probably know about it. A lot of gay men I've talked to are not aware of prostate orgasm or their prostate.
Interesting.
So the small size of the massager compared to a full-size penis to a lot of men is a benefit. I do not recommend gay sex during a session because you're interacting with somebody else. This has to be a very personal, intimate event for you to experience one of these orgasms. So microdose, comfortable setting, relaxation, allowing the feelings to come on. And most sessions using the new the cannabis strains, these arousal strains, will be between 1 hour or 60 to 90 minutes. And once you get going, these orgasms can last up to an hour or longer. And what I'm waiting for documentation is there is high and low peaks. So you'll have an orgasm, you'll reach it, and you'll go, oh my God, and you scream out whatever. And then there's the excitation, the completion, and then another wave will come. Now, women have been experiencing multiple orgasms for forever. And we read about them in the Greek period. We read about them in the turn of the century. And women have the ability to have multiple orgasms because they're just wonderful creatures who can do that. So, but with this technique that I have presented in this book, men can have multiple orgasms of similar or greater strength. And this is a revolution. And I talk about this revolution in the early part of the book. When men begin to have these powerful multiple orgasms, they transcend normal consciousness and they get into higher levels of consciousness that are equal to some of the deepest states of meditation that we've recorded.
Yeah, and what seems very interesting about this, just based on the information that you have in the book and that you've been sharing, is that it seems like these orgasms that are occurring through the stimulation of the prostate are not necessarily ejaculatory orgasms. When we have a penile orgasm, there tends to be ejaculation, and then that creates the refractory period,
exactly.
Which is why men normally don't have multiple orgasms. But here you're describing an orgasm that might happen in the prostate. It might happen elsewhere, you know, around the genital area or around the pelvic area, or it could even translate into other parts of the body, or then even, I think, probably at the most all-encompassing level would then be the full body orgasm. Which again, I haven't experienced it through this method, but I'm familiar with that. But the sense of feeling of the orgasmic release and vibration in every molecule of my being, and then it catapults your consciousness into a universal state of just absolute ecstasy. But it is not involving ejaculation at all. But it has that sexual sense of this amazing crescendo of energy that then translates into these very, very altered states. That's what you're describing here in the book, is learning how to cultivate this process within oneself, and how it's a self-directed activity that's very intimate of the self with the self. This is not a partnered activity. And even there, that can be kind of a hang up for men or you know, anyone in our society who has issues with masturbation or like, oh, that's dirty, it's bad, let alone, you know, some kind of anal stimulation that's being described here. But that's what seems fascinating about this form of orgasmic activation, is that it is self-directed and that it allows for kind of these multiple crescendos and waves of energy that, I mean, you do describe that eventually your prostate will get tired and then you need to take a break, and you actually recommend at least a half a week to a week between sessions and not trying to overdo it or anything like that, because of course, anything that is ecstatically pleasurable, it's going to draw us towards it and want to do it more. But you know, the prostate has its limits as well. It's not an endless supply of orgasms, but certainly describing a 30-minute orgasm or a 60-minute orgasm is something that is completely out of the ordinary for what most men would think of in terms of orgasm. So you're really describing something very different than what many people would experience on a normal basis, I think.
Yeah, the prostate, I mean, we're fixated as the penis being the master sex gland, but really the prostate is the master sex gland, because the penis doesn't function without the simial fluid during an ejaculation that comes from the prostate gland, and it's mixed with semen, and that's the ejaculation. And then you correctly defined the process of a male orgasm. You ejaculate, and then there's a refractory period, which doesn't allow for any more orgasms. You're done. You got to sit and wait. Depending on your age, it can be as long as an hour. And what's going to happen to your partner? She's done or he's done. So a prostate orgasm correctly stimulated can last, and I mentioned this, repeatedly flowing up to 60 minutes. It's been documented men having an hour or 90-minute orgasms, multiple orgasms flowing and flowing and flowing. And I'm just waiting to see some European studies on what a male or a multiple orgasm means. And my experience and what I've documented and what I've read about is it's equal to a woman's multiple orgasm. In some cases, it may be stronger because of the continuous stimulation. Now, I'm somewhat hypothesizing that because we don't know, we don't have enough analysis. It's kind of like we need a Johnson & Johnson study. Yeah. So something like that. But it's a real awakening for men. And I think that it needs to be discussed more openly rather than hidden behind the back of a room or a dark alley as a kind of a taboo topic. So,
yeah, and it's interesting what you describe here. For when men start getting into this process, it sounds actually very similar to a lot of the somatic releases that happen during various forms of psychedelic therapies, where people might need to cry, they might need to laugh, they might need to moan, you know, kind of move through these different energetic expressions as they're getting in touch with their being, getting in touch with their body, getting in touch with these sensations of energy that are moving through them. And the necessity for really allowing, you describe this in the book, of allowing yourself, you know, to go through and express these things, that seems to be an important part of the process of being able to set aside your inhibitions over how do I sound or what noises am I making. And that's why you're describing of making this an intimate personal space for yourself. And that's also why you might not want to have your partner there actually as you're learning this process, because that can create an inhibition around expression where people might feel unnecessarily self-conscious. And here you're kind of really promoting this idea of really letting yourself go into the experience and letting yourself express in whatever way is most necessary for you to help this process along.
Right. What we're talking about here, and the ancients apparently knew about it, is sexual or sacred sexuality. And I believe, in my own experience, as well as the men who I analyzed and recorded, that this is one of the high forms of healing trauma. And I think one of the future uses for having men work towards a fulfilling orgasm is its psychological, physical, and spiritual release of trauma, but also becoming more aware of the physical. Men tend to be out of touch with their bodies a lot, and this is why men suffer from prostate cancer and a lot of other degenerative diseases. Many times they'll go to a doctor when it's too late. Mm-hmm. All the signs may have been there that, hey, you got to look at your prostate, you got to look at your the rest of your body or function or something like that. And they'll go to the doctor. The doctor says, we can't help you. Well, this is a block. This is a trauma that has been applied or instilled as a young person or at a time in their life that wasn't resolved. And I believe that orgasming is the ultimate release of a trauma, is the ultimate release of the physicality where you're moving. And this is what the ancients did. They would have orgasmic sessions to reach nirvana. Nirvana is this higher level, the highest level of consciousness. It's a godlike mind where you're connecting with the gods, you know. And if you're a fundamentalist, this might seem like the devil's work towards for you, but you need to really pay attention to your physical body. And having this amount of pleasure that leads to an orgasm is really critical to healthy living, but also to your own personal evolution.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It actually points to sort of this profound paradox that intense levels of pleasure in the body can lead to generating the most, in a sense, out-of-body states of consciousness, less body-identified, where it becomes more universal forms of consciousness, like you say, that entering into, say, nirvana or a godlike state of consciousness. But the body is then the vehicle for that, and it's the activation of pleasure and the cultivation of ecstasy that allows for that. So it can be, for those who are, you know, really prudish in their spirituality, it could seem very counterintuitive that, like, oh no, you can't do that. That, how could that possibly be a sacred form of consciousness if you're dealing with bodily pleasures? You know, there's so many different spiritual and religious traditions just really dump on the physical realm and dump on the body and say all of this, you know, we've got to leave all this behind and we've got to be celibate and starve ourselves to death or whatever it is that they say. But this is a totally different route to theoretically the same end of a fully blossomed consciousness and a fully realized being. I'm curious, how would you describe this? What impact has this had on your own life and your own sense of being, beyond just being able to experience profound levels of sexual pleasure, which always sounds great, but how do you feel this has improved your life?
I kind of follow, and I have followed, the Eastern traditions. I've started meditating when I was 18. And I had this worldly relative, my grandfather, I mentioned at the beginning mm-hmm. of the show, who was hugely impactful on me. And so it just crystallized the need to understand that we're part of a planetary community of souls, and everybody's on a different level, and having a good orgasm. It's funny, I laugh about it because it's almost hilarious that we don't grasp or recognize the great benefits of having an orgasm. I just wanted to say, when you were talking, Martin, that one of the reasons that women live longer than men is that they have more hormonal harmonics than we do. They're more hormonal. They have menstrual cycles. They let out this blood that we don't really understand a great deal, but they're shedding not only intrauterine wall, but they're also shedding toxins and other properties that are that could be damaging to the body. Men don't have that. I believe, and this is what my research shows, is that the specific hormones that are released when we have when men have a an orgasm, and these hormones are so important that they are actually hugely beneficial in keeping us healthy and young. And when we know from other cultures that men can have orgasms into their 90s and beyond. And so to not have an orgasm is a detriment. We were meant to have orgasms all through our life. Now, what we don't know, and what I think the benefit is of using cannabis, is that the psychedelics within cannabis take the foundation of a hormone or of an orgasm and shift it to these higher octaves, which is what the Hindus were doing. And in that state, we not only evolve as a species, we also become almost immortal in some ways. You know, they're talking about natural body function to, you know, under certain conditions to live to be 150, to be, you know, even older than that. And I think these orgasms, as we understand them, are really evolutionary, hugely beneficial, and hugely healing. Now, one of the things that I've found out in writing this book is it's probably about 5 to 10 years ahead of itself. And so it's not going to be widely recognized for a while, simply because right now, especially in the United States, we're dealing with a lot of issues.
Yeah. Really? You don't say.
Yeah, don't say. And so, you know, people are going, an orgasm, you know, whatever, you know. The other thing is, and I mentioned this in the very beginning, because our educational system is so behind, is so limiting, is so fear and anxiety based, there is a huge population of men who will consider this book the devil, the work of the devil, who will be shamed in thinking, I would never do that. And it, like I said, it's probably about 5 or 10 years ahead of the population of the United States. Now, I have a lot of people that are in Europe that are more open to it. The Latin countries are less open to it because the Catholic Church is so strongly grasping the consciousness of the Latin communities. And of course, the same thing kind of in Japan. Strangely enough, China, the people that I talk to in China are more aware of it, but not to the degree that, you know, it's going to be welcomed in by huge communities of men. So anyhow, I kind of went off on a little bit of tangent there, but that's where I see the research in this book. I will say also that since the book came out, I've been asked to write 4 follow-up books, 2 of which were are being planned to use in pornography sites. And I don't know if the idea is to have men have prostate orgasms and watch porno. You don't really need the two, but there's some a learning curve going on right now about male sexuality. And I don't know where these 4 ebooks that I've been asked to write would fit within the future, but someone read the book and thought, well, maybe I can apply it to this area. And by the way, pornography is a multi-billion dollar industry. So maybe there's a fit there somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that I was going to ask you, that I believe this book just came out this year. Is that correct?
Just came out a couple of months ago.
Yeah. And I think I got pretty much a fresh off the press copy when it arrived in the mail a couple months ago now. But yeah, I wanted to ask you about where you were pointing your interest next, and if there would be follow-up books. It sounds like there are going to be at least an ebook form. And I was wondering also if you were considering a book that was more focused on female sexuality and use of cannabis.
On my podcast, Destiny, first let me say this, that there's a website, The Male Orgasm, where I write articles on the latest data. There is the Chapter 4, which is available. And then there are the top 20 arousal strains that are somewhat universally recognized here in the United States. They may not be as readily available in Europe or Asia, but my co-conspirator and the doctor who wrote the foreword to the book, Dr. Pepper Hernandez, were thinking of a second book that addresses women and their sexuality. The issue, though, is that women, under the right conditions, relaxation, so forth and so on, tend to be much better at addressing their sexuality and having multiple orgasms, as I mentioned before. But that being said, you're right. A book for women and addressing their sexual needs and how these cannabis strains affect them is definitely in the works.
Yeah, and I think it's worth repeating a point that you brought up earlier. And some people might think that this is an offensive term, but the term of being female frigidity, that there might be some backlash to use of that term. But I do think that it's a valid medical concept that there are women who experience kind of a sexual shutdown where they're no longer responsive to sexual stimulation or touch, and that many women have found that cannabis kicks that door right back open in a very easy way, that it doesn't require any kind of medical intervention, doesn't necessarily require therapy. It just requires the use of a little cannabis and some relaxation, and then those sessions come back. And women who previously were unable to have an orgasm, suddenly they're having multiple orgasms, that it can really change things for women in the same way that it can change things for men, but through different pathways and through different anatomical features of the body. So I think it's always an interesting question of how.
You hit it on the nose, Martin. Women, again, have an advantage because they have exterior genitalia, and there is a company, and I know the owner, Foria, which is a spray topical that has THC levels in it and other emollients, that when you spray it on the genitalia for women, mm-hmm. you can have, without having the alteration, the altered states of consciousness that THC presents internally, you don't have to get high minded. You can have this Foria sprayed on your genitals, which leaves, with this a little stimulation, you can have pretty good orgasms.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but men can't do that. You can't spray Foria because of the way the anatomy is. There's a whole bunch of nerve endings in the clitoris and the outer lips of the vagina where this spray is absorbed. And so just with a little stimulation, you can have pretty good, from what I hear, pretty good orgasms if you're a woman.
Yeah, and it's amazing. This plant really is amazing, cannabis, and I think it's no wonder that it's probably, if not the first, one of the first cultivated plants in the world, that it spread through China, India, the Middle East, Europe, Africa. You know, it's not an accident that this plant showed up in all these cultures and had so many uses, and for health, for well-being, for spirituality. I mean, it really has so many applications, and it's one of my favorite plants in the universe. It's where I started with altered states of consciousness, and I fell in love with it just right away. And you probably had a similar experience, that when I was young, you know, I was told all kinds of evil things about cannabis and how it was just, you know, is going to rot your brain and turn you into a, you know, a zombie or whatever and a criminal. And from the very first time that I got high on cannabis, it was like, everything I've been told about this is complete bullshit and a lie. And I became very motivated to be a cannabis activist as a high school student. It's like, I want to see this stuff legalized. And I started putting up flyers around my high school about why cannabis should be legalized. And I never thought it would be. I just thought of, you know, I just wanted to express myself around it. But, you know, here we are. You know, again, you're in California. I'm in Oregon. We have recreational cannabis, medical cannabis. And, yeah, we have products now that are being created specifically for sexual experience. And I'm all for it. I just think it's great. We've come a long way. At least in this area, we've definitely come a long, long way. And I applaud you for writing this book around a somewhat taboo subject of the prostate and, you know, a different route of sexual stimulation for men. But hey, if it works, you know, that's the thing, is if you get results, and especially the fascinating results that you're describing in this book, I think that a lot of men could be very interested in this. And also, just as we've been talking, that women who might be experiencing sexual frustration or lack of sensitivity or desire, that cannabis is a great route for addressing that issue. So it's something that can serve both men and women in their own unique ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Cliff. So we just want to reiterate this to the audience, that the book is Cannabis and Sexual Ecstasy for Men: Awaken the Prostate for Multiple Orgasms. Cliff Dunning is the author. It's an easily digestible book. It's very informative, but not too long, and it has step-by-step instructions for how to introduce yourself as a man to this process of sensitizing the prostate. And you know, I look forward to where things develop beyond this. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you.
And if you're new to cannabis, remember to microdose, and then go to the maleorgasm.com. Chapter 4 lists all the latest, the top 20 arousal strains of cannabis, which is really critical because you don't want to go in there. And the other thing I should just mention is a lot of these dispensaries have bud tenders, the guys who are behind the counters, who don't know what they're talking about. So if you don't know ahead of time what you want, and you go in there and say, hey, I want an arousal strain, you might get some off the wall strain. So I really urge you to find a strain that has a high level of a terpene known as limonene. And if you can't find that, then go to my book. It's all free. Chapter 4, themaleorgasm.com, and choose one of the top 20. Or just print that page and bring it in there and see if they can find you one of those strains. If you're on the West Coast, they should be able to find any of them. If you're in the Midwest, no problem. East Coast, a few of them may not be as readily available. And, of course, if you're in Europe or another country, the limonene terpene is the focus. The highest level of limonene you can find is going to be an arousal strain.
All right. Well, thank you for that practical direction to point people in.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Cliff.